Beware, spoiler phobes. It's a very storm of spoilers Halloween. Or maybe you don't have to beware this week. We're just going to recommend some fall and Halloween movies that we like to consume during the spooky season. Oh, actually, wait, you do have to beware of spoilers because some huge Game of Thrones Season 7 news leaked and we have to talk about it. After all, we're not spoiling this week. We're spooking. Hello and welcome to a storm of spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite Halloween costume was one time in college. I got a special effects makeup friend of mine to make me a Buffy the Vampire Slayer vampire for a whole day of classes.
Wow. My name's Joanna Robinson, and I'm going the opposite of Dave, which is I want to admit my dorkiest Halloween costume, which was for some reason in seventh grade, I decided I wanted to be the American flag. So I was the American flag, even though I'm not particularly patriotic. I think it was seventh grade, maybe sixth grade, thereabouts.
And I'm Neil Miller, and mine is probably my favorite and most dorkiest when I was in, I believe, third or fourth grade. My mom handmade me a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man costume from the movie Ghostbusters.
Amazing.
And what's funny about it, especially for those who have met me and know that I am an adult chubby person, is that when I was that young in third grade, I was super skinny. So it was comically unfit. So there's that.
And welcome, listeners, to a very storm of spoilers Halloween, where we are going to talk about big Game of Thrones news, because we are a Game of Thrones podcast, followed by each of us giving some recommendations of our favorite pop culture media to consume. I think it's mostly going to be movies and visual things for this holiday season. And it's a great holiday season, because we don't have to care about religion. And we're all scared about the election anyway, so we could just pretend it's about Halloween.
Unless your religion is Satanism, then I have other recommendations for you.
Hmm.
Or like some sort of, there must be some sort of like Wicca association with this, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't want to leave out the witches when we're talking about religion.
Right.
I mean, I guess... What I enjoy about Halloween is that it's something that I can remove from all religion. How about that?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's I enjoy candy.
Mm-hmm.
So Halloween was always pretty good for me. I was I was into Easter for similar reasons. Never cared about the religious part so much as the candy.
Yes.
Halloween is my favorite holiday because it's at the end of October, which is my birthday month, my favorite month of the year. I love fall. I love, you know, everything just gets like nice and cold and dreary and wonderful. And it's a holiday that you spend not usually with friends. And so if you don't necessarily get along with your family, it's like one of those holidays that is not sort of tainted by any family drama. It's just good, happy friend time. So I love it.
For sure. I also have some fall associations just with general creepiness, which is why I like Halloween. But I'm sure we could probe all into that later on. Joanna Robinson, did we curate any reviews last week?
Okay, speaking of family stuff, I want to read maybe my favorite Star Wars spoilers review of all times. This comes from Red Tigress, 5 stars on iTunes. Great discussion, Red Tigress writes. And she says, I can't believe my mom found this podcast before I did. She doesn't even know what a Star Wars Rebel is. She's never read a comic book in her life, yet she loves this podcast. I do even more so since I know what they're talking about. Everyone in the podcast does their homework before discussing things, and there are great voices that bring up really valid points. You guys are making it enjoyable to get through all my World of Warcraft fishing quest grinds. Thanks so much. So thank you, Red Tigress, and thank you, Red Tigress's mom, for listening to Storm Spoilers.
Yeah, man, yeah. We should do a World of Warcraft episode at some point and bring in somebody like Matt Patches to defend himself.
I mean, I've never heard of a fishing quest grind, but I'm really happy to be the soundtrack of somebody's fishing quest grind.
Nice. I do feel like at some point we could evolve from the off-season tour to just off-season show trials, where we put our friends on trial for their opinions. And if we did, Patches would definitely go first with Warcraft.
It would be like Patches every week, though, I think.
We could just have a podcast where we just hold Patches accountable. We could call it Holding Patches Accountable.
Although, you know, I just love the idea that your mom likes Storm of Spoilers.
Yeah, I like the cross-generational sharing there. I've been trying to get my mom into Storm of Spoilers, but because she doesn't watch Game of Thrones like up to date, she's still, I think, on like season two, and we're on the off-season tour. She's like, well, I didn't watch that like a movie, and I think I might have lost her forever. But I'm going to keep trying, as should you. And then everybody could leave reviews, big family reviews. For us, Storm of Spoilers.
Yes, Storm of Spoilers. Kid tested, mom approved.
Nice.
Maybe not too young, because we do curse just without thinking about it. But that's what the explicit tag's for. Who are we to tell you how to raise your kids? Neil, speaking of Game of Thrones, man, there's been a lot of stuff this weekend. It seems like it's almost like we are in between episodes, but we're not. That's the amount of information that seems to be breaking.
There is.
Maybe?
There's a lot of stuff out there, which
there is a lot of information, like a lot.
So but I'm gonna run you through a couple of quick items from the Maester Scrolls here. As always, remember to take our survey. Go to wondery.com/survey and tell us who you are and what you're like and what you do like. And conofthrones.com is where you can find information about Con of Thrones, where we're doing our live show next summer. And we're going to be on other panels. It's going to be fun. Okay, so now let's get into the big stuff. We talked last week, if I recall, about the reemergence of everyone's favorite rower, Gendry.
We did.
He's back. Yes. He's back with his mallet. Baratheon Warhammer. Yep. And
his mallet.
And at the time, it was interesting because this had Ser Davos and Tyrion joining together and traveling together, apparently to find Gendry or maybe something else near King's Landing. So I think one of the big questions was, how do those two end up together? Do they ever talk about the Battle of Blackwater? And is it awkward? So this week we got answers to probably about 2/3 of those questions, or maybe just the one, in how they get together. There are set photos and videos showing a contingent of the King of the North and his right-hand man, Ser Davos. So Jon Snow, Ser Davos, traveling to what appears to be Dragonstone, where Queen Daenerys has set up shop, and Jon Snow and Daenerys finally meet.
Dun, dun, dun. Bum, bum, bum. There's like, I mean, okay, so a lot of people complain about spoilers, getting spoiled by us, getting spoiled, whatever. And, you know, and for the most part, I agree with Dave that like, this isn't ruining, this is enhancing. But, you know, like I did today watch a grainy, terrible long distance video.
Did you feel guilt?
No, I didn't feel guilt. I feel no guilt about it, but I agree with. You know, I almost agree with Weiss and Benioff in that, like, I watched a terrible, terrible grainy video of Kit Harington walking down a long flight of stairs to meet up with Emilia Clarke. And I was like, well, maybe this is not how I wanted to see this meeting between these two characters. I actually don't think this is a scene where they meet, because it looks like he's just joining her to, like, gaze out at the ocean. And I bet where the scene where they meet is probably in an interior sort of throne room situation. But I was still like, yeah, they're right. This is not how I want to know about this, you know, and like, that's not to say I'm going to stop indulging in spoilers as we go forward. It's fine. But like, you know, that was sort of the argument about Tower of Joy. Like, did you really want to see the Tower of Joy fight Joanna last year via grainy long range footage? And like, honestly, when it came to the finished product, seeing the finished product on screen, I don't think it spoiled the experience for me. So I'm looking forward to the higher definition version of these two characters meeting. But I think what we do know is that it's going to happen much earlier than we thought. It's going to happen really quickly that Daenerys Targaryen and Jon Snow meet. So
yeah, well, and there's the director who was on set for the Gendry scene. Is this right? He is the one who's directing episode 5.
I don't know that to confirm.
I believe I read that somewhere.
I believe you. So
that would imply that this meeting takes place before that. So within the first 4 episodes before they would send Tyrion and Ser Davos off. So, you know, yeah, even though we know it happens, I mean, it has to happen eventually, people. Come on. There's a lot of context that we don't have, which is probably the most intriguing part, which is how do they react to each other? What do they know about each other? How much does Daenerys believe what we assume Jon would tell her, which is that a bunch of ice zombies are on their way? You know, is she into that, or is she her sights set on King's Landing? So there's a lot of context we don't have. The other thing to remember that I wrote in an article that I was working on today is Jon Snow doesn't know who his parents are. So unless somebody figures it out within the first couple episodes, he may leave Winterfell not knowing that he's in any way related to Daenerys. So there, it could be a somewhat... Well, it could go one of two ways. It could be a fairly contentious meeting between the two of them. It could also be a sort of meet cutie moment between the two of them where, you know, he's like, ooh. I do think it would be very Game of Thronesian for Jon Snow to sort of get a crush on Daenerys and then later find out that she is his aunt. So there's all of that to be answered. I think go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say one of the fun details, you know, so we've seen Jon, Davos, Tyrion, Gendry, Missandei, Grey Worm, Daenerys, I could go on and on. It's all of Daenerys' crew plus Melisandre, Jon, and Davos at, it looks like, Dragonstone.
Wait, Melisandre's there?
Yeah, Melisandre is spotted on set in like her full winter garb. Too, like with the cloak and everything. So, well, okay, here's what I'll say. There's a long range photo of someone in red, and apparently the priestess Kinvara is not going to be in it this season. So it's probably Melisandre. So all of them are there. That's interesting. Gendry's there. That's interesting. Or Gendry's somewhere. That's interesting. But one little tidbit that came up is that there's a scene where Jon and Davos see a dragon for the first time. And that's going to be really fun, right? Like there's shooting of them, like sort of looking, like it's clear that they were shooting two actors looking at something in the sky in awe for the first time, but there was like nothing there. So I'm excited to see Jon and Davos especially, because Liam Cunningham is a better actor, to see them see a dragon for the first time. It's going to be fun. So yeah.
Here we are in season 7, and we're still getting thrilled by people seeing dragons for the first time. They were puttying in their hands.
It was fun when Tyrion saw a dragon for the first time. You're going to like Liam Cunningham seeing a dragon for the first time.
I'm part of your putty, just like we but liked. His hands has less fingers, fewer fingers.
It's true.
The other thing we wanted to mention this week is that there is a story going around. It originated from a Reddit post that is being, I would say, reported as a leak of the season plot. But when you dig a little deeper, I found the original Reddit post for it. It really is just somebody on Reddit who is putting all of the rumors together in the best sequential order they can, and then making a bunch of guesses. So if you see any headlines out there with crazy stuff about ice dragons or what was the other one?
White polar bears.
Yeah, zombie polar bears.
WIGHT. Yeah, polar bears.
Then, just use caution out there, folks. There's a lot of stuff that we don't necessarily buy.
I will say the main reason I believe that Neil is rejecting this info dump is because it claims that Oh, no, it was Thoros, not Tormund. Never mind. Right? It's Thoros dies?
Yeah, apparently Thoros dies, which, who cares?
Who cares? Really? For some reason, earlier today, I misread that. And only just now, as I was thinking in my head, I was like, oh, wait, that's a Thoros. I thought it was Tormund. And I was like, no wonder Neil doesn't want to believe it. He wants to believe that Tormund makes it to the end. So anyway.
But it really does feel, you know, we had a similar dump like this last year.
Right.
But the one last year, at least, did sort of present itself as like, this is insider knowledge. And it was very scary because it had some weird stuff in it. That's where we got the idea of somebody blowing a horn and the wall falling down. Really, it turned out to be not true. This one is more of a educated speculation. And from the looks of it, a lot of wish fulfillment stuff for fans. So, you know, we'll just stick to what we know, what we can verify at this point via all the set photos that are being carefully curated by our friends around the blogosphere.
Remind me, who is at Dragonstone right now? Like, you know, Stannis and all of his people left. So is it just like, if Daenerys is quartered at Dragonstone?
Mm-hmm.
Who is she taking it from?
I would imagine it's whatever is left of the household guard that Stannis would have left there.
Right. So do we think Jon is just going to get word that, like, you know, she dispatched of Stannis' retinue or, like, whatever? Is that why Melisandre's there? Because she has a connection to Dragonstone. So does Davos, of course.
Would Melisandre go back there to, like, flee from something?
Maybe. You know, if Melisandre were to head back to Dragonstone, it's not like anybody there, you know, I would imagine that he just left like servants and house guards there. And, she could have just returned to Dragonstone and been like, yeah, Stannis is still out there. But Daenerys retaking that would not be hard. I don't think that.
Another possibility, like one of the wild speculations in this leak post, which what it did is, and you can go find it, it's on Reddit if you want to read it. This quote unquote leak is what I'll say, is that it strings together, with helpful links, a bunch of things we do know. And so if you see a bullet point without a source link to like a set photo or set video, then it's just a made up, as Neil puts it, like wish fulfillment sort of thing. But so one of the unsubstantiated bullet points is Jon receives a raven from Dany. She's summoning the lords of Westeros. Jon and Davos decide to go because they need the dragon glass from Dragonstone. I don't know of any dragon glass at Dragonstone. That doesn't mean it's not there, but like maybe there's a cache there that.
No, somebody did mention it. Who mentioned it back in season? It was while Stannis was at the wall. I believe it was Shireen or Stannis who they were talking with Jon and Sam. And Sam said something about Dragonglass and was telling this, recounting the story of being Sam the Slayer. And someone said, we have a bunch of that stuff on Dragonstone.
Awesome. So if that's true, which I believe you because now I'm remembering that scene, mm-hmm. Maybe Melisandre's like, I know where it is. And that's why she's still alive and with them. Mm-hmm. Do you know?
Yeah,
like, if Davos doesn't have it, like, because we're like, why would Davos work with Melisandre when the last time we saw him, he's like, can I kill her, please?
Right.
You know, and so, like, if she's still alive and working with them, maybe it's because she has vital information that could save the realm. That's my educated guess.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And the Daenerys part makes sense, too. I mean, nobody's going to put up a fight for her to retake Dragonstone.
Yeah, no, I was just wondering if you're going to see like a siege of Dragonstone or if it's just going to, if there's just so few people there that like, it's just going to be after the fact. If we're just going to get a raven, it's like, oh yeah. And in the fullness of time, Daenerys Targaryen took Dragonstone.
Yeah. I feel like they'll save
because there was no one there
stuff.
To fight her. Yeah, exactly.
What I don't really get from a lot of this quote unquote leak is it really doesn't give me a good sense of what happens at King's Landing. There's a lot of like weird guessing about Cersei being like pregnant and Jaime, Bronn, and Tyrion having like a secret meeting, which also doesn't necessarily feel right, unless Jaime really does turn away from Cersei. It does feel like there's probably more that will happen at King's Landing than what's in here. So there's that.
Okay, in the books, in A Storm of Swords, according to like the Wiki of Ice and Fire, in Storm of Swords, it says, at the wall, King Stannis Baratheon sends word to his castellan, Sir Roland Storm, on Dragonstone to begin mining obsidian. He fears he will not hold a seat much longer, but hopes the Lord of Light shall grant him enough frozen fire to arm themselves against the others before Dragonstone falls. So, it's like, it's not just like dragonglass shards sitting around. It's a mine of obsidian.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah. That's going to be visually interesting.
It's going to come into play for sure.
Making fighting Uruk-hai or something like that. All right.
So that's pretty much it for the week. A lot of stuff, but not particularly substantive beyond the fact that Jon and Daenerys will meet at some point during the season. So congratulations.
Well, and earlier than we thought, and like, I mean, think of how many characters that is in one place.
That's true. And it's all your favorite characters who meet on a beach. Instead of being on a boat.
Right. But I mean, yeah, it's like, that's so many plot lines. That's Varys. That's, and the Greyjoys are going to be there, right? And so, like, it's just, it's so many people. It's so many storylines all in one place. It's crazy. And that, it just gives, it lends a sense of urgency of like, we're getting to scenes now where like, you're going to recognize every single face in the room, not just like three. But like 12 deep, you know, and I'm excited. So
opening the way for a season about the Iron Bank finally settling its debts.
With polygons becoming the new currency of Westeros.
One day. Hey guys, what's that on the horizon? It looks like an ad break. Yeah, that just saves me having to transition into things. I actually like that a lot. All right. Boo! We're back. We're back, and it's a Halloween Storm of Spoilers. We kind of gave some teases as to what we were going to be talking about last week, and we're going to go through those first, and then each of us also brought a little thing we added on since last week's little teaser about Halloween. It's a spooky season. I said before that, you know, I had a little bit of fall. I think it's because I grew up in the West, and it becomes an atmosphere thing when things get chilly and things get harvested and you actually go on hay rides like some sort of weird 1950s suburban child. I don't know. It's like a Christmas story should have been a Halloween story and taken place in Boulder, Colorado. That's how I feel like my childhood was. And like the weird parade that the schools would have where the kids would all walk through all the classrooms so you could see everybody's costumes. I love it. And I think I kind of got stuck there because both my choices today are going to be great animations for that time period in your life. But another thing that was happening in my life in that particular time period was Neil's first pick was actually in theaters.
That's true. Neil? In 1993, this is 5 years before Sex and the City premiered on HBO, a trio of actresses, a young Sarah Jessica Parker, I want to say around the same time as sister acts Kathy Najimy, and at that point still already very famous Bette Midler, played a trio of witches in the film Hocus Pocus, which is about three resurrected sisters in Salem, Massachusetts, who come back on Halloween night and must be defeated by two teenagers.
And baby Thora Birch.
Yeah, one of the teenagers is a cat, right? Turned into a human.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, no, there's a guy, girl. No pizza place. The cat.
Oh, that's right.
And baby Thora Birch.
Really so, dating ourselves with these references to Sex and the City and guy, girl, and pizza place. Good job, everybody.
Well, isn't the cat in Hocus Pocus like the
Zachary Binks?
Yeah, well, Zachary Binks, but isn't that the inspiration for Salem on Sabrina the Teenage Witch? Or am I crossing my streams?
Or is it the other way around?
I'm going to do some Googling while you talk more Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I have long been a weak person when it comes to scary stuff. Now, I'm strong in many ways. One of them is I don't like jump scares and traditional horror things. And when, as I was growing up, like when I watched Poltergeist as a kid, it scarred me to the point where I was not able to watch it again until well into my 20s. So I am not a horror person by any measure. Hocus Pocus was sort of right up my alley because it's more a comedy and it's ridiculous. And even though it has some sort of scary, goofy things in it, Gary Marshall plays the devil. Not exactly the devil.
And Penny Marshall, his sister, plays his wife.
Right.
That's the creepiest thing about Hocus Pocus.
it's a super fun, goofy costume thing. Like it's clear that they got, you know, actresses who were it kind of reminds me of there was a Tim Curry show that was, what was it about, vampires or zombies or no, my the Little Witch, what was that thing called, the teenage witch, not Sabrina,
not Sabrina teenage, which while you're vamping, I will say Sabrina the Teenage Witch launched in 1996. Hocus Pocus is 1993. So clearly, Sabrina the Teenage Witch took their animatronic black cat, Salem, from the animatronic black cat, Zachary Binks, in Hocus Pocus. Continue.
It just kind of reminded me of just goofy. It was one level above sort of the TV movie of the week Halloween movies, and it's just a fun movie. Like, good luck telling me, explaining, convincing me that it's not just super fun. And it was that right time of age where I was like 10 years old and just thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, some crusty Gen Xer or old millennial on Twitter. I consider myself generally a crusty old millennial, but some crusty old millennial on Twitter was like, when did Hocus Pocus become like such a thing? Like, why do millennials care about Hocus Pocus? And, I actually watched a sort of interesting debate rage about this on Twitter. And I think one of the reasons is it was always on ABC Family back when Freeform was ABC Family. Like, it was always on in Halloween. And mm-hmm. So it's like one of those things, like back when we used to just like watch the thing that was on before we became like on demand culture. This was, you know, along with Harry Potter, I think at some point ABC Family started playing Harry Potter around Halloween. Like, you know, this is just part of it. This is just what was on. And you're right, Neil, that it is just like a step up from, I think the Olsen twins had like a Halloween TV movie. Like mm-hmm. there would be these Halloween TV movies, and this was, just that with better production value and lipstick and Bette Midler. And
an amazing musical number at a school dance.
Yeah, I Put a Spell on You.
Yep.
So good. It was fantastic. It's super cheesy and super great. What's his name?
Doug Jones.
Yeah, Doug Jones is a zombie, a colonial zombie. It's freaking great.
Yeah, and
just
I think
fantastic.
the other thing, you're right in that it was always on. It's very much like if you were a kid from the 80s, and you lived in the 90s, it was like a Christmas story where it's like every year on TBS, they run like a Christmas story for 24 hours right. on Christmas. So Hocus Pocus was that movie in the pre-Harry Potter era. So to all of our younger listeners, there was a time before Harry Potter. And to all of our older listeners, get over it. This movie's awesome.
It is awesome. So
that's my pick. You know, if you're going to watch something and you aren't looking to cause yourself undue anxiety, a movie like Hocus Pocus is probably the best thing.
For sure. I think it also really hit a sweet spot in terms of there was a time period. This is the Goosebumps time period, which is the only reason I feel like I could speak to that with some sort of authority. But like the early to mid 90s opened up sort of like a scary YA visual fiction, television, movies that didn't exist as far as I could tell. Like, you had the Goonies and whatnot, but, like, the Goonies was, like, super dark for some kids and, like, but otherwise pitched at younger kids. So Hocus Pocus, I think, is a sign of the golden age of, like, YA spookiness. Not horror, just, like, a general spooky story, sort of what things yeah,
are,
for teenagers.
Are you Afraid of the Dark was mm-hmm. on SNICK. I was too chicken for Are You Afraid of the Dark, by the way. I was old too. Like, oftentimes I would be the babysitter and the kids would want to watch Are You Afraid of the Dark on SNICK and I'd be like, nope, it's your bedtime. So sorry. No, none of this. is it my turn now to talk about my?
Yes. No? I was going to sort of age up along the spectrum, but you, I think, have something for the slightly older. Hocus Pocus is fun for all ages, and I suppose yours is too.
It should come as a shock to no one that if we're going to talk about horror, I'm going to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I just wanted to make a bid for the three, I believe it's three. Don't worry. I have a tab all open about this. The three Buffy the Vampire Slayer Halloween episodes. Really, it's only two that are super, super good. Because the third one, All the Way, is from, I think, season six, which I like to call season sucks. And, it's a lot about Dawn. So I'm not really into Dawn, though it was written by Stephen DeKnight. So Buffy Vampire Slayer season six Halloween episode, All the Way, guest star, fantastic Amber Tamblyn, and written by Stephen DeKnight. But the two fantastic Buffy Vampire Slayer Halloween episodes are Fear Itself, which is from season four, and one simply called Halloween, which is from season two. And the one called Halloween is when everyone turns into their costume. And the one, Fear Itself, is everyone is trapped inside a haunted house that sort of comes to life. The great premise of Halloween episodes on Buffy Vampire Slayer is that in the lore of Buffy Vampire Slayer, Halloween is a night that the vampires take off. Because it's like alcoholics on St. Patrick's Day. They're like, this is fucking amateur hour and we don't want to deal with it. So the vampires are like, they rest on Halloween. But, there's still some mischief that happens in season four. It's a bunch of frat boys invoking a fear demon by accident. And in season two, it's a sort of a prankster named Ethan Rain who comes to town and causes chaos. So season two is great because you get to see Buffy turn into a helpless maiden. Willow is a slutty ghost. Xander is like an army man. It's great, great fun times. Early appearance from Seth Green. Classic Buffy Vampire Slayer episode. And then in season four, which is not my favorite season, this is a really good one. Because you have everyone facing their primal fears in this haunted house, which is sort of like a Black Mirror episode that came out that we'll talk about next week. But you have them facing sort of their deepest fears within this locked haunted house. You also have Giles wearing a sombrero giving out Halloween candy. What could be better? So yeah, that's my bid is if you're a Buffy fan, go ahead and rewatch one of those two fantastic Buffy Halloween episodes, or any Buffy episode counts probably as a Halloween episode. So there you go. And if you're gonna rewatch Buffy or watch Buffy from the beginning, may I recommend that you check out the Buffering Podcast, which is a new podcast. Fantastic, fantastic show hosted by two women, and they are watching all of Buffy. They're still in season one, so you can catch up and go forward with them. Go forth.
Yeah, or just join them where they are at season one. I can't imagine that they missed a lot of classic moments, right? Or are you maybe not one of those you could skip the first season of Buffy people?
No, I kind of am one of those people. But so the podcast is called Buffering the Vampire Slayer. The co-hosts are Jenny Owens-Youngs and Kristen Russo. Jenny Owens-Youngs, who's a friend of the podcast, and so is Kristen, Jenny is a musician. And so she has created like a unique song, like a recap song for each episode that plays at the end of the Buffering episode. And they're fantastic. So at the very least, you need to go back and listen to the songs at the end of, I think they've only gotten to episode like seven I think, of season one. In general, I'm okay with you skipping season one, but I want you to hear all of Jenny's songs because they're amazing. And someday she's going to put out like a five disc, like mega mix of all these songs, I hope. So anyway, that's my Halloween excuse to talk about Buffy. You're welcome, everyone.
That almost makes me want to watch Buffy.
You should watch Buffy, Neil.
I've never watched it, but I do like Allison Hannigan and Michelle Trachtenberg, so I guess it's probably right up my alley.
I mean, one of those things is great on the show. So,
oh man, shots fired. Also a big Joss Whedon fan. I think the only reason I've never watched Buffy, like a lot of shows that I'm like behind on, is there's just a lot of it.
Yeah, well, here's what I like to say about Buffy. You can skip season one if you want, but it's a short season. I think it's only 13 episodes. But you can skip it if you want. Season two and season three are must watch, and then you can stop. Especially you, Neil, you're right around my age. It's like for people who are right around our age, watching, like, I was the same age as Buffy. She went through high school. So there's just like a lot of really great, like 90s high school stuff going on, and just early vintage Joss. So really, I'm just recommending 2.5 seasons of Buffy Vampire Slayer as must see TV. Okay. And then if you want to stop there, I give you that permission. So,
all right.
And hey, it was cool enough for Dave to dress up as a vampire for Halloween one year. So
damn right. I did that whole series. I didn't go over to Angel, but I did that series. It was nice. It was pleasant. I like Buffy.
Dave, what's your Halloween your first Halloween contribution?
Oh, I'm going to throw the first animated hat into the ring, and that hat is an upside down teapot because I'm doing Over the Garden Wall. It is a mini series of cartoon episodes that run about 11 minutes. There's 10 total episodes, so it's sort of like a movie. If you just watch them back to back to back, you can watch them in chunks. They follow our two protagonists, who are two brothers lost in the woods, Wirt and Greg, and they come across a talking bluebird and a not talking frog of various names, and have a whole bunch of adventures that include them coming across a town that everybody has pumpkins for heads, coming across an old woman that may be eating children, and then there's always a woodcutter who is around the woods that is warning them about the beast, who is evolving mythological creature as the series goes on. So it starts off.
I would move so quickly.
I'd be if there's
out
a
of
beast
that neighborhood, just the whole thing you just described, I'd be like, you know what, I'm gonna live somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it would. As soon as you get the feeling that I would live somewhere else, the characters attempt to move on. And right around the time you start asking why they're in these woods in the first place, the story starts to hint and reveal. And by the time the 10 episodes are over, I think it's very clear what the whole arc of the thing that you watched was. But the great thing about Over the Garden Wall is not only is it rewatchable because it's cute and has like that fall feeling and is like, has like a mythology quality that is, I think, lacking in a lot of cartoon entertainment these days. But the first time you go through it, I think making the little plot discoveries ends up being as rewarding as the character discoveries that come at the end. I discovered this, pretty early on, but it wasn't until, I guess, last fall that I became super obsessed with it. Because I downloaded a whole bunch of rips of a song called Potatoes and Molasses that I decided to listen to every morning before I got up. I guess that doesn't really help describe the plot, but Joanne, I know you've seen this. Do I need to go any further?
Well, let's give it some more selling points, which is the main voice actors are Elijah Wood, Molly Alinsky, Christopher Lloyd, Tim Curry, John Cleese, Shirley Jones, Bebe Neuwirth, Shannon Sossaman, Chris Isaac. So it's got a really good voice cast and Tom Lennon, then I forgot you the first time. It's got really charming songs, like not just Potatoes and Molasses, which I always sing as Potato Mr. Patches because of Dave. But yeah, just really, really charming songs. I think it's from the Adventure Time people, isn't it? Or some Adventure Time people?
Yeah, Patrick McHale, who worked for Adventure Time in a little while, and also the show The Marvelous Misadventures of Flapjack. But yeah, he pitched it like way back to Cartoon Network, I think in 2006, and it didn't air until 2014 or 2015.
Someone, like my best friend actually watched it because, she's got kids, so she's more aware of Cartoon Network than I am. She's also the one who got me into Steven Universe. She came over to my house specifically to show, she's like, we have to sit down and watch at least 4 episodes of this thing, and then I will leave you with it. And I said, okay. So we watched 4 episodes of it, and then I just watched the rest. Cause as Dave said, it's a really fast watch. It's so good. It does have that really enchanted sort of fairy tale quality to it, but it's not twee in any way. It's actually kind of scary. Like Neil, I would tell you that it's scarier than Hocus Pocus. The pumpkin headed town is just like, I was not a fan. But overall, it's just a lovely, lovely piece of entertainment. There are comic books also that go along with it that came out a little while later. And I want everyone to see this. I think it's so charming. So
yeah, it ends up like sort of continuing because I think they released the Tome of the Unknown at Comic-Con this year, which is the name of the original short, but it's actually a book of stories. So I don't know. Although the miniseries is self-contained, the sort of over the garden wall world continues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So watch it, Over the Garden Wall. Where could be? It was on Hulu for a really long time. Is it still there? Let me check.
I will check that out while I also do this transition to Neil, who's going to bring up one movie that I love and one movie that I haven't seen, but apparently both are perfect for Halloween.
Yeah.
Yes, it's and Over the Garden Wall is on Hulu. Sorry.
Nice. Excellent. So my second pick is really two movies. One, I don't think we need to talk about as much because everyone's seen it, and if you don't love this movie, there's a long conversation that we need to have. But I was trying to think of, in preparation for this, movies that aren't necessarily about Halloween, but take place on Halloween. And E.T. the Extraterrestrial is absolutely one of them. In fact, there's that lovely scene where E.T. they just kind of take him out, and people think he's a kid in a costume. So
he meets Yoda.
He meets Yoda.
And he says home, because their species are in the same galaxy.
So there's that, great movie. But the other one I wanted to talk about is it's a much lesser known indie film. I don't know. Have you guys ever heard the story of director Emily Higgins? She is from Austin, Texas, and she directed her first horror film when she was 12 years old and has made, several subsequent movies that have all gotten to be more professional. The first one was very indie, very shot, in someone's neighborhood. And in 2013, she had her first release, and it actually played at South by Southwest. It's a movie called Grow Up Tony Phillips. And it's a story of a young man who is, I believe he's graduating high school, if I remember correctly. It's been a while since I watched it. But he is just one of those kids who loves Halloween with the passion and loves making costumes, and that's kind of what was the formative thing of his childhood, is doing this with his friends. And so it's about him kind of growing up and having to deal with the fact that his friends aren't into Halloween as much as he is anymore, and he's maybe a little too old to be trick-or-treating. And it's a sweet little coming-of-age story. And I was looking it up. I found out that it is on most streaming platforms like Amazon and Google Play and YouTube for like $4. So it's a very accessible, very charming little comedy with a little bit of just some heart, you know? Who doesn't want a little heart? All my Halloween picks are they're super charming and fun. Because I don't like scary stuff.
Everybody's Halloween's picks, this have a lot of heart. Except maybe Joanna's second pick, but
I think it has literal hearts.
Which, yes, maybe. Or at least has the the replication of something that I would recognize as Hart until it bit my face off.
That's a good intro, right? I put the thing on my list, my second final entry. And here's what it's a nod to. I mean, like you could really put any classic horror movie. That's one of my favorite horror movies. But like Neil, I did not grow up with horror. I was too much of a chicken for horror. I think in college, like one summer, we decided to watch a lot of classic horror. So we watched like Rosemary's Baby and The Omen and stuff like that. And it was like super hot outside, and it's kind of hard to be scared when it's like really, really hot outside. That's, I don't know if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, no, that
to
makes
watch
sense.
Horror movies in the summer is like not as scary. But at some point in my adult life, I started a sort of October tradition of continuing to watch some of those classic horror movies that I had never seen with some friends and loved ones. And, you know, my close friends and I now call it Horror 101. It's basically an education of Joanna Robinson, watching these things. The first one we ever did sort of incidentally was The Thing. And I loved watching The Thing as an adult surrounded by a bunch of adults. Like, it was a really good way to watch this thing and not be scared of it. I would have been so scared of it as a kid. And then, you know, watch, what is it? The Hateful Eight last year, which is like so draws so much from The Thing. And I was like proud to know that. So it's part of this whole like pop culture nerd thing where you want to fill in as much of that back catalog as you can. So you get all, smugly get all the references. And that's a big part of what this like horror education is for me. So The Thing or any other classic horror movie that you haven't seen yet, you should watch, like Carrie or Halloween or Friday the 13th or just any of those. Pick a classic and watch it. Nightmare on Elm Street. Do it.
Yeah. I actually didn't see The Thing until like for the first time, like 5 years ago either. I don't know how it happened. Probably similarly to you, where it's like no one's going to show a kid that. And then yes. You just don't find it on your own because you're like, if I haven't seen it by now, it must be fucking horrible.
Right.
But no, it's great.
It's so good. Yeah. Dave, what's your final thing?
Oh, my final thing is actually half of a movie, if you look to get it. It was released in the mid-70s as a double feature with The Adventures of Mr. Toad. But it is The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, the Disney animated version, where Bing Crosby does the voice narration. And it has the whole Headless Horseman song and the Ichabod Crane song and a... I mean, this is the sort of thing that when I saw it implanted so many ideas of a East Coast, like Northeastern Halloween being like the Halloween season. So a lot of images that end up popping up in Legend of Sleepy Hollow, even before it gets scary, of what like a idyllic revolutionary era town would be. Then when it finally does get scary, the way they make the various plants become either hands or make the sound of hooves or owls become completely frightening are all things that I didn't realize until I moved to New York are distinctly parts from that part of America. So it's like I got this whole thing in my head, like watching Pete and Pete on Nickelodeon and like Legend of Sleepy Hollow, that like the autumn of Halloween is like leaves and pumpkins and chilly weather and bare trees, which isn't always the case all parts of the world. So if I'm ever in a place that doesn't make me feel Halloween, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow can trigger all of those feelings in me. Which at first was just an artificial New England Christmas, but now can trigger New England Halloween, but now can trigger an actual New England Halloween. In terms of animation wise, I can't say that it's like my favorite Disney product ever, but it did get a theatrical release, which means it does stand up to, you know, standards of that time with their, you know, musical narration pieces, which I don't hate. But this particular story I love much more than I think the original telling of it, which I eventually read by way of loving this short so much. So yeah, I would definitely check it out. It's really easy to find rentable on your various Disney platforms, iTunes, Amazon, or because it's technically half of a feature film. It just goes up on YouTube all the time and no one gives a shit. So also do that.
So since you love that short so much, what were your thoughts on the Tim Burton attempt with Johnny Depp and Christina Ricci, et cetera, et cetera?
I didn't mind it as an interpretation of a Tim Burton movie, but I didn't like it as a Headless Horseman tale. So it went in a good direction trying to give some better backstory that wasn't just in a song, but in a bad direction with some Tim Burton flares that I think, I don't know, some of those jokes aren't as funny as I think in that movie as Tim Burton thought they were.
Yeah, and I have to say, I really did not need Ichabod Crane to be a detective, because he's a school teacher, right?
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is he's a school teacher with, like, a big Adam's apple that I guess the Disney cartoon is what comes to my mind, too.
Well, the cool thing about the Disney cartoon is that he really likes to eat, but everybody else thinks he's a ladies' man because he keeps, like, going over to dinner and everybody, like, falls in love with him. But he doesn't actually interested in sex or anything. He just wants to eat.
He's autistic, is what you're saying. He's on the spectrum.
Basically.
Okay. So yeah, Ichabod Crane on the spectrum, school teacher, big Adam's apple, large appetite, skinny body, covered bridges, Disney. Check it out.
Yeah.
It's great.
Pixels.
I like any Disney short that starts with a book being removed from a shelf by an invisible hand. Like, time
yes.
to tell you the story of, and this one definitely does.
Yes, absolutely.
Nice.
Excellent.
All right.
Well, guys, I know you're all listening to us right now on your various devices, but I hate to tell you, that means you've already fallen into the trap set for you by our next subject. Isn't that right, Neil Miller?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Next week, we're going into the future. Well, actually, we're going into the future and the past. And wherever else technology can take us, we're going to be renting a beach house in a Black Mirror episode, or actually all six Black Mirror episodes. But we're going to San Junipero, which I'm told is not the way you pronounce that, right?
It's just like Junipero is just, oh God, I can't. It's Junipero. I mean, is even an anglicized way of saying it. But there's a missionary in Northern California, or a Junipero Serra is the name of like a famous missionary who came to Northern California. There's a huge statue of him here. So we all grew up learning about Junipero Serra. So to hear Junipero really just killed my boner for that episode. But nosedive and the last one with the bees, which names I can't remember, were really, really great episodes.
Well, all right, all right. We'll get to that next week. Next week, we are talking Black Mirror, which we are actually going to talk about all three seasons of Black Mirror. So if you haven't caught up, it is all on Netflix. Go watch it. It's a really great show. We're going to go through the new season and have a good time with the fear of what technology is going to do to kill us all. And then we can also announce our episode after that. Next week's Black Mirror. The week after, we're doing a little comic book talk and comic book movie talk with a trip to the Sanctum Sanctorum and Doctor Strange.
Nice.
So that's what the next 2 weeks look like here on Storm of Spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Talking about Infinity Gems without actually mentioning Infinity Gems. It's going to be quite a week. Well, I mean, if we all survive Black Mirror. I'm like 3 episodes into the 3rd season, and I'm digging it. But man, it makes it hard to work amongst like 4 screens every day, and then like you end and realize that it's killing you.
Guys, I ordered covers for my webcam after watching that episode.
They filmed me.
Well, that's probably not a bad thing for anybody, but hey, don't take our word for it. Watch Black Mirror and join us next week. Thanks for listening. Where could people find more of your stuff around the internet? Let's start with Joanna this week.
You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can listen to me on Little Gold Men, Decoding Westworld, This Week I'm Fighting in the War Room, and every week on Storm of Spoilers. And on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
Neil?
You can get me over at filmschoolrejects.com, where I just posted all kinds of cool artwork from MondoCon here in Austin last weekend. And you can follow me at Rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. And if you'd like to send us an email, this is a question we've been getting, you can send it to stormofspoilers@gmail.com and it gets to us.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. I blog at geek.com. And the rest of my podcasts are at fightinginthewarroom.com. And we will be talking to you next week. Or maybe sooner. You never know. Boo!
You can blame me. Try to shame me.